From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. At least 28 people were killed and 61 injured in a car explosion in Turkey's capital Ankara. The blast happened near Turkey's parliament building, and it was reported that it hit a military dormitory. In a live televised speech, Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoglu accused forces linked with the Syrian Kurdish YPG of attacking the military troop convoy on Wednesday. Ankara promised to continue to shell the YPG, with the Syrian Kurds denying Davutoglu's allegations, saying the Islamic State group was behind the attack. But Davutoglu claimed that Ankara had evidence showing where the attackers came from and how they were organized, and that this information would soon be shared. The prime minister said Turkey identified the perpetrator as a Syrian national with links to the Syrian Kurdish YPG militia, adding that the alleged attacker received assistance from the Kurdish Workers' Party, or PKK, which is outlawed by Ankara. Davutoglu said 9 people had been detained following the attack in the heart of the capital. Wednesday's attack followed Tuesday's closed-door meeting of the UN Security Council to discuss recent Turkish shelling of Kurdish YPG militia targets in Syria's north. The council urged Ankara to comply with international law. Turkish artillery units have been shelling targets in Syria since February 13th. The Turkish units have been pounding Syrian Kurdish forces in an apparent attempt to stop them from taking over the city of Azaz, about 20 miles northwest of Aleppo. According to the Russian Ministry of Defense, both government and opposition-held towns over the border from Turkey have fallen under Ankara's shelling. Meanwhile, Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said Thursday that the proposal to create a no-fly zone along the Syrian-Turkish border, floated by Ankara and by Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel, would not help the fight against terrorism, a fight that is the official reason that the U.S.-led coalition is conducting in Syria without the permission of either the U.N. Security Council or the government of Syria. U.S. Army Colonel Steve Warren, a spokesperson for that U.S.-led military campaign, said Wednesday it was not the right time for a no-fly zone over the north of Syria. 4 times as many U.S. troops as originally planned will take part in a joint military exercise with South Korea next month. The U.S. will now send 15,000 troops to the annual computer-simulated Key Resolve exercise. That figure is up from 3,700 last year. South Korea will also reportedly increase the number of troops it will send, following nuclear and missile tests by Pyongyang. The U.S. action followed the passage of a new sanctions bill by the Congress Friday, which the White House said would be signed by President Obama. A high-profile ASEAN summit in the U.S. culminated in a statement apparently criticizing China for its recent island reclamation projects in the South China Sea. The statement was promptly challenged by China's foreign ministry. This was ministry spokesperson Hong Li.
We welcome the U.S. and ASEAN to develop relations. We hope the relationship can help boost regional interaction and cooperation and maintain regional peace and stability. We have noticed that some countries intend to hype up the South China Sea issue, but most ASEAN countries disagree, because this will damage regional peace and stability as well as political trust between the countries.
The UN Special Envoy to Yemen told the Security Council Wednesday that the people of that country have withstood an unspeakable tragedy. Latest UN figures show that more than 6,000 Yemenis have lost their lives since the Saudi air campaign against that country began in March of 2015, and more than 35,000 have been injured. Jocelyn Sambura has more.
Speaking through an interpreter to members of the Security Council, Ismail Ould Sheikh Ahmed called for a cessation of hostilities, which would open the way for renewed talks.
Yemen is living through the most heartrending days in its history. Many parts of the country are again witnessing airstrikes and extensive ground fighting. There has also been a significant increase in the number of missiles fired indiscriminately into the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The escalation of military activities, along with the worsening of regional tensions, have created additional obstacles that threaten to delay a new round of talks.
On Wednesday, a suicide bomber attacked a Yemeni army camp in Aden, reportedly killing at least 10 people. Mr. Ahmed warned the absence of government control in many parts of the war-torn nation has facilitated the expansion of terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State or Daesh. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
With the U.S. narrative unraveling in Syria and elsewhere, the U.S. media seems to be adrift. For more on that, we spoke with the host of Crosstalk from RT, Peter Laveau, who just returned from speaking with Western journalists at a meeting of the OSCE in Vienna.
I felt I had a one-on-one experience with George Orwell, and we discussed 1984, because that's exactly what it was all about. I mean, Russia is a member of the OSCE, but it's treated like a pariah. I have to say that the Russian delegation there is absolutely professional. I mean, I can't believe how they have to sit there and take it day after day on this ridiculous commentary coming out of the other countries, the OSCE, particularly with this ridiculous documentary that came out of the UK that was put on the BBC. The BBC also giving airtime to a U.S. Treasury official saying Vladimir Putin is corrupt. I mean, it's just one thing right after another, and no one is ever held accountable. There are no facts ever given. It's just get along by going along. Sorry. But, you know, it takes a few people like myself just to point out some really embarrassing facts, and people just turn away, they turn red, or they just say, well, that's just you work for Putin, so it must be a lie. I mean, no, we're not that stupid, and a lot of people aren't that stupid, and that the reason why they behave that way is because they know their narrative is collapsing. It's collapsing very, very quickly if it has to do with Ukraine or it has to do with Syria.
You know, you lectured them about their failures and their complicity in some of the horrible things that the United States has been doing around the world. Why don't you tell us about that a little bit?
Well, you know, when I took the floor, I said, you know, first of all, why are audiences going to alternative media? Why do people listen to you, Don? Why do people watch my program, Crosstalk on RT? Why do they do that? Because people are brainwashed to do it? They're forced to do it? No. More and more people are beginning to realize the mainstream media is not comprehensive, and in many times it's completely false for special interest groups, be it in the military or pursuing a bogus foreign policy by the United States. And so, you know, I said, you know, let's look at, you know, the most obvious case of weapons of mass destruction in 2003 before the illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq. Was anyone held accountable? Anyone held accountable in Western media for their drumbeat to war? Because I said Western media is propaganda because it is a stenography union for the U.S. State Department and the America's vassals in Europe. So, I mean, you want to lecture other countries about propaganda, that's like calling the pot black. And I said, well, look, who did get punished? Judith Miller at the New York Times, but not because of that, for something completely different. So I said, shame on you all.
What was the response? Did you get a round of applause?
No, a couple people clapped. It was kind of like one of those westerns. You know, you walk into the bar and everybody suddenly stops because they all knew who I was, and I proudly wore my RT pin on my lapel. But they knew I was there. And when we came to the Q&A time, when I put up my hand, the moderators, they knew exactly that, you know, I'm going to come out firing with both pistols. And yep. They gave me my go, but no one reacted. No one reacted, and you know, and this is this really kind of sad thing is that, you know, they had the Ukrainian delegation. There was a group called FakeProject.org claiming that they're independent, they're not getting any money from the state. And the first slide that goes up, it says IREX, you know, International Research Exchange. This comes from the U.S. government. This is a government, U.S. government-sponsored psych-ops program. That's simple as that. And you had all these young Ukrainians speaking perfect American English, mimicking the State Department better than Americans can. It was really farcical.
Mm. You know, the narrative, it depends on where you want to begin, but let's say we begin back in late 2002, early 2003, when the U.S. is getting ready to go into Iraq again. And after softening it up for the whole period from 1991 until 2003, with bombings every few days, starvation, the whole bit, They were going to go in, be greeted with flowers. It was going to be over real quick. They were going to set up, get Saddam Hussein out of the way, let the Iraqi people have their democracy prosper and make money off their oil, etc. Here we are 13 years later. The country is leveled. Hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions, are dead, displaced, or living in hell. And it's spread all over the region in the same way that they were going to be spreading that democracy to Libya, Syria, etc. The narrative now is having to accommodate the fact that Bashar al-Assad is going to remain in Syria and Syria is not going to fall, and that the Russians had a big hand in it. How are they going to explain this and fit it in so the narrative continues?
The thing is that it was pointed out to me by one of my adversaries, and it wasn't a compliment; it was an observation. But I took it as actually a compliment. He said, "Peter, why do you always mention international law?" And I said, "That's the only fair playing field that we all have, great powers and small." And that's why you never hear it in Western media. They never talk about international law because the United States and its allies violate it on a daily basis. And that's why Western audiences are not acculturated to thinking in those terms. I think in those terms because that's where we can all come. We can say, well, this is the law. I mean, we can read it in different languages, but we're going to pretty much come to the same conclusion. And I think it's this referring to international law is the most powerful way to challenge this false narrative that comes out of Western capitals. Because why do we have ISIS? We listen to the Republican debate. I mean, no one talks about origins. Well, Barack Obama certainly doesn't talk about it. Because if you did talk about it, then you would find out that, we made a fundamental mistake by illegally invading Iraq. And what we've done is we've actually partitioned it. Part of the country is controlled by the Islamic State that has gone into Syria. And then, now we have the next wave of propaganda. And again, it gets worse and worse. And it becomes more and more obvious that it is false because the Russians, after 18 weeks, they've pretty much pounded a whole lot of terrorists into the ground or made them move on. And some of them have moved on back to where they came from, back to Turkey. And so the Americans are, they're getting it's like watching someone with epilepsy. They're really, really taking it very bad because obviously they weren't there to destroy terrorists. They were there to illegally overthrow the legitimate government in Damascus, President Assad. You don't have to like him or dislike him. I'm asked that all the time. So you like Assad. It's immaterial if I like the president of Syria. The fact is he is the president, and no one outside has a right to overthrow him. And this is, when you watch the explanations out of the State Department, they almost look childish, infantile, and trying to explain what's happening in Syria. Russia is bombing hospitals, never given any evidence whatsoever. As a matter of fact, our listeners should know that Russia, on a very regular basis, I think it's even daily basis, gives information public, where planes have taken off, where they've bombed, what kind of outcome. I mean, they're very, very transparent about it. They give it on to the Americans. The Americans don't return the favor, and they don't go public. And if you look at some of the briefings in the Pentagon, the State Department, it's laughable. It's Russia's fault. Can you give us some evidence of it? Well, we don't have a lot of evidence. And they go on and on, and they trip over themselves over their own lies. Now, it's up to journalists to report that. Most of them don't. Some do. So it's still trickling out. But logic kicks in. That's why this narrative is crumbling.
Yeah, one of the things that I like to do in the newscasts is include a nice long slice of John Kirby or Mark Toner at the State Department expounding on these things because they make the counter argument for you. You don't have to say anything; just let them talk.
Yeah, well, our good friend Dmitry Babich said to me once. He said, John McCain, when he starts talking, don't interrupt him. Just let him go.
That's right. So, this whole theme is, it's been big here, propaganda thing that we saw the evidence of it, of course, in the hearings last year with the Board of Broadcast Governors, the partnership that they're doing with Khodorkovsky and with,
That's despicable. That is so despicable. Again, there's no transparency. I mean, I know because we make it a point to learn about these things, but the average viewer, the average listener, the average reader will not know these things.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing we're talking about here for our listeners that haven't caught it here before, a corrupt oligarch, if that's not redundant, a corrupt Russian oligarch who has faced criminal prosecution charges, all kinds of stuff, is a partner with the newly reconfigured Voice of America, Radio Liberty, etc., which is now, as of a year and a half ago, allowed to propagandize to the American people with their own money. And they're using an outlet
which was never done before.
Never done before. From the beginning, from the 40s and 50s when they created all that Cold War stuff. That's one thing they weren't allowed to do. And now they got around it, but they didn't actually overtly do it. And now that they're doing it, and Khodorkovsky is at the heart of it.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Again, when I think going back to Vienna, when I look at Ukraine Today, the television program, which is, of course, another propaganda operation,
right.
Because, it's all directed against Russia. They focus most of their energies there, and that's a waste of time, because what they want to do is they say they want to reveal the truth, but actually what they're doing is just the opposite. They are just being a propaganda machine. And you know what, Don? I checked their ratings last night. Interestingly enough, no one watches it.
No one watches it.
Voice of America, Radio Liberty. How many listeners do they have? It's insignificant statistically.
Right.
Why? Because it's not material that is cogent, understandable, reasonable, logical. I mean, it's as simple as that. I remember back in summer of 2005, I think it was in August, and it had been announced that RT was going to be, Russia Today was going to be launched. And I remember writing an editorial. I was working for United Press International. And I said, all I have to do is, they don't have to have a Russian spin to it. All they have to do is tell the truth.
Right.
And tell the truth, it will be compelling.
And
if they challenge the Western narratives, it'll be more attractive. And you know what? That's exactly what they've done. For me, it's a miracle. I never expected what the last 10 years would be like.
Well, the thing that gets me about Khodorkovsky with the Voice of America, et cetera, now is, if you look at it, you're an American. RT is American propaganda, and the Voice of America is now Russian propaganda coming from Khodorkovsky.
Don, what's really tragic is really tragic. And we can use the example of Syria. I mean, here, logically speaking, you have these regional powers, Turkey and Saudi Arabia. Their proxies have failed inside of Syria miserably. Mm-hmm. Now it's time to wake up and smell the coffee. What the Turks should do, the Saudis should do, they should get behind an American-Russian peace initiative, get a ceasefire in Syria, and start humanitarian aid to the most needy communities. And then start this process, this very long, hard process of ending this war. But no. They won't do it, and it's the United States is the most culpable power, because it has demonized Russia so much. I mean, the amazing compliments that Russia has made in the last 18 weeks, when the Americans were sucking on their thumb for year after year, they didn't care. They didn't want to end that war. Israel didn't want that war to come to an end. Everybody was looking for their own angle, and all of the regional powers looking for their own angle. And you know what? As a result, you have this massive refugee migrant problem for Europe. Nobody wants to connect the dots. It's really embarrassing. Everybody gets red-faced. That's exactly what today's program on Crosstalk is going to be about, is that everybody's trying to figure out how to pay for all of it, but why don't we just stop bombing these countries so people won't leave? That's pretty common sense.
You think? And the war is now traveling, too. In Turkey, for example, they can't even protect their own military. The military convoy got blown up near Ankara. They had the explosions in Istanbul the other day. Turkey is going to see this war on its own turf very soon.
And Don, what's one of the interesting things, and this won't apply to Americans, but it does apply to Europeans, is that Western wars, illegal wars and meddling in the Middle East, is no longer an academic exercise. It's no longer something that happens somewhere else to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Now it happens at home. Now, I don't know. When I flew to Vienna and I came back last week, I went through metal detectors. I got patted down. Security, high security. Angela Merkel, that's 800,000 people into Europe, into Germany, and nobody went through a vetting process?
Mm-hmm.
This is very dangerous. I understand the debate refugees and migrants. There are migrants among them. They're taking this opportunity. There are traffickers making a lot of money off of this. And there are people that truly are in need that have been, because of Western bombing and military campaigns, they've had to leave their homes. There are legitimate people like that. But unfortunately, people get to slip through. We have to be more careful about that. And Europeans need to start understanding that, because when there's going to be a terrorist cell that could move there and start doing what's happening in Syria and in Turkey and move it in more into the heart of Europe, then people are going to realize how we got to this situation right here.
And, you know, I agree with that completely. But there's an added dimension to it, too, because the people that they're afraid of as terrorists are actually the same terrorists that they've recruited, armed, and placed into theater. There are also, at some point in time, going to be people who are just nationalists, people that are going to strike back for what's been done to their country.
Don, I don't remember, seven or eight years ago when they had all that piracy problem right off of Somalia. Remember mm-hmm. that?
Yes, I do.
And you know what? They found out that a lot of the pirates, who were they? They were actually people that were trained by NATO to stop piracy. So right. They knew all the techniques, okay? And you're absolutely right. Like there are people now that are finding themselves refugees in Europe, and they fought in these proxy wars in Libya and in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and now they're showing up at our doorstep, okay? And if they are not given a good welcome, well, they can make trouble. And let's be aware of that. See, it's if I were to rename my program from Crosstalk, I would rename it to this: the law of unintended consequences, because that's what we keep seeing over and over again. And you and I know that it's predictable. These things are very easy to predict.
It's one of the reasons that I sometimes get hypnotized by some of the conspiracy theory things, because even though they are apparently unintended consequences, they seem so obvious at the outset that I keep running into cognitive dissonance with the fact that they didn't do these outcomes intentionally, because it was inevitable.
You look at the Pentagon, I forgot the number now, they ended up like training 50 guys, and then half of them gave away their weapons, and the other half just ran away, okay? At least the Pentagon was honest about its really huge, very expensive mistake. And then you have the CIA on the other side just handing out to guns to anyone that can carry one, okay? Don't you think that's a bad idea? And some of them are coming from Saudi Arabia, people that they empty out their prisons, and then they say, go fight jihad for us in Syria, and these are very unsavory people, and you don't vet them and giving them a gun. It's really, really extraordinary, and we saw it with Libya. It's not like it was a long time ago, and they want to repeat this whole thing, and then now we have just in the last few hours this Operation Sophia, where they want to militarize controlling migrant flows here, and now they pour them all back into Libya. I mean, poor Libya, the country that needs a break. It's Libya right now.
Yeah, and the last time, a lot of the folks, the bad players that are going to be shipped back, and my guess is there won't be a lot of them included in who gets sent out. It'll be the people who should be allowed to stay. But in any event, the bad players going back to Libya, this is their second trip there, because they were sent there by the U.S. and NATO in the first place to take over the country.
Absolutely, and what gets even more problematic is that all the while when they're thinking about this, Europe has no solutions to how to deal with this problem here. I mean, Angela Merkel, amazing what a year or 2 years can do. That woman was riding high, one of the most powerful figures in world politics, and now she is stumbled. And this, I really think that she's her grip on power is loosening, because the sanctions against Russia are not working. They're hurting Europeans much more. She has really no European solutions to this migrant refugee problem at all. And you have Eastern Europeans just saying, no, we're not taking anyone, no one. We're not taking any of them. And people start building fences. I mean, the borderless Europe is one of the great achievements that we're told of the European Union, and that one of those few achievements is just dwindling away. Now people are putting up fences all over the place. The whole idea of Europe is I'm not going to say crumbling, but it's certainly on wobbly feet right now, and I don't see any leadership whatsoever. If people want to pass the buck, or the usual European thing, let's just throw money at it, which doesn't work.
And in Germany, in the among the elite, if this is going back even to pre-1989, there's always been a division in the elite over Russia, the finance, yeah, and the U.S. allied political structure. On the one hand, wanting to maintain a hostile posture; on the other hand, the industrialists and others in the political sphere wanting to embrace Russia, wanting to have normal relations, make money together, all of that. And with Merkel wobbling, there's got to be some backroom game going on between those two factions.
You know, absolutely. This is playing. Well, the thing is that Merkel, like Tony Blair in 2003, she doesn't want to find herself on the wrong side of the Americans. That's her. Unfortunately, that's what motivates her. That actually motivates a lot of European leaders. But the facts on the ground tell a very different story. The Americans are terrified the Germans and the Russians will embrace each other because they are natural partners, you know, and they have been. If you go back, you know, you were saying before 1989. Well, I'm a scholar of European history, and we go back to the 1880s, okay?
Right,
because they are natural partners. They had a very strong relationship, and for a variety of reasons that we won't mention here, that alliance unraveled. And so that's no wonder about increasing NATO expenditures, because they see that that NATO isn't what they would like it to be from a Washington perspective. There was last summer, there was an interesting Pew poll that came out, is that a lot of people like Germans, French, Italians, it was something, a question, I'll paraphrase it, you know, if something, if Russia were to move against one of the Baltic republics, should we go to war? And most of them said no. Why should we go to war over the Baltic republics? And it's really interesting that the BBC documentary recently, it was exactly about that scenario. I don't think it's any coincidence. So what this is all about is to, you know, get the Europeans to get back in line. And the Americans will pay for it. The American people will pay for it. The Europeans will get off scot-free here. And the Poles will certainly get to play. They want to sit at the adult table at the at NATO, because they're not allowed to sit at the adult table in the EU. So maybe this is their way. And this is all a complete waste of money. There's no Russian aggression whatsoever. The United States and its allies overturned a democratically elected government in Kyiv. They're the ones that started hostilities. And the 9,000 people that have died in Ukraine civil war aren't in Kyiv. They're in eastern Ukraine, and they're ethnic Russians or Russian people who speak Russian. So, no Russian aggression. But you know, NATO gets some new machinery, and has a new mission, and Russia is the enemy. But that's very dangerous, because you know what? Russia will react. It will protect its border.
Now, if you look at the placement, the additional placement over the last year or two of military assets up to Russia's border, on a map, and then look at what we were just talking about between Germany and Russia, you can see that essentially NATO is putting up a wall between the two of them.
Yeah. But this is coming from Washington. Washington, this is the way that they keep a control, a handle on it, because if you have the Germans and the Russians flirting too much, then the imperative of the current security arrangement no longer is valid. And you know, our listeners have to remember, because it's, again, because there's so much propaganda out there, is that Vladimir Putin came to power reaching his hand out to the West, wanting to embrace each other in a way that was equitable. Then you had Dmitry Medvedev when he was president. He made it very, very clear that we need new structures, and nobody listened to him. And then you have Libya. Forced regime change. Then you have the beginning of the Syrian civil war with Western proxies, Saudi proxies, Turks, and et cetera, et cetera. Then the overthrow of a democratically elected government in Ukraine. Vladimir Putin, the political elite here in Russia, say there's no reason to talk to these people. They're pathological liars. Even if you make an agreement, I mean, I've said this a number of times in my program, even just because John Kerry says that he wants to have an agreement and shakes hands with Sergei Lavrov doesn't mean it necessarily they're going to keep to their word, because they have a history of breaking their word. It's very easy to see this. No, we won't. We're only going to have a no-fly zone over Libya. You know, when did the people start being slaughtered in Libya? Was it Gaddafi? No, it's when NATO started to drop its bombs. That's when the slaughter started. That's when people started leaving for Europe. So again, the unintended consequences.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.